Fairy Tale Adventure is truly epic. It's Amigos, everything Amiga. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're talking about Fairy Tale Adventure.
Oh, man. That's my life.
Now.
That's what it is. Every day. Skipping through the woods. Fairies everywhere.
You know, there's different sorts of mythos out there.
Yeah.
You got your Grimm's fairy tales. You got your Nordic crap. You got your...
Could you be a little more kinder to the Nordic people?
I mean, that stuff's hot right now.
It's awesome.
And all that.
It's cool. You know? That's always been cool. We love the Nords.
And you've got your Cthulhu mythos. Would you put that up there with the...
No, it doesn't rank up there with Thor? Really, well, I mean, it's not really based any sort of... I mean, that's a complete made up by a dude. Like, the Nordic stuff, it's been spun down by hundreds of thousands of people over the millennia. Like, not just one guy.
Well, yeah, but the Cthulhu mythos is the same way. I mean, it's only been around since the 20s or whatever, but there's lots of people that are still writing stuff
within
that universe.
It's a maturing mythos.
I think. I mean, it definitely doesn't have... What else would you put up there? Would you put all the Aesop stuff in there, too?
You got all the Greek. I'll put the mythologies
Those are
awesome. Everybody loved those.
So, if you're ranking your favorite kind of, you know, oeuvre of these sorts of tales, would you put the Grimm stuff near the top?
No, I'd put the Greek stuff near the top and then kind of work my way down. I'd put the Nordic crap, as you called it, right underneath that, because it's cool. That's what young boys want to hear about. Guys with thunders whacking each other and shooting lightning and Valhalla and all that crap.
Valkyries.
Hercules and Zeus and all this crap. That's what we want. Medusas. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool stuff, man. Then you got you're more like what would you call this? The stuff like this game's made up from.
This is like the Grimm's fairy tales.
This is more Grimmy, yeah. But the Grimm stuff's okay. Don't get me wrong. You know, but there's some lighter colors in there.
Sure.
You know, not as much lightning throwing, not as much hammer smashing, but not too bad. What about you?
I don't know. For me, I like the fairy tale stuff because. Yeah. You can take it either way. You know, you can be as light with it or you can be as dark with it as you want.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of stuff that's still unexplored out there. You know, everybody knows about not the Little Mermaid, it's Hans Christian Andersen. Everybody knows about like Hansel and Gretel and all that crap. But there's like the Grimm's fairy tales, there's a bunch that still really haven't gotten their due yet.
Yeah.
And so I think that's sort of an undiscovered thing that you can, and of course, everybody wants to make everything dark and gritty these days. So you can, you know, Winnie the Pooh, blood and honey it up as much as you want.
Didn't you, it's part of it because that you're kind of, you don't like real dark, violent stuff.
But yeah.
You throw a chick in the oven.
Well, yeah. And part of it too is like, I like the setting of like the forest, you know, and cottages. That's sort of like the German, you know, black forest setting. I think that's cool.
Have you heard that? I know I've mentioned this movie to you before, but I'm sure you haven't watched. There's this great movie called The Company of Wolves. Have you
never
seen this?
Never seen it.
Have I ever mentioned this to you? It's sort of
a Neo Geo game.
That's a whole other game. This is The Company of Wolves. It's a sort of a takeoff of Little Red Riding Hood.
Okay.
You know, but it's in the kind of the German forest gothic-y style.
Right.
And it's good. It's good. You'd like it. It's not what I would call brutally violent, but it's got a lot of imagery and stuff. Angela Lansbury's in it.
Is it from the 70s?
No, it's from the 80s, okay. I think. But it's not one that's well known.
I will check it out. I'll watch it with Eep. Eep is all in. You know, Spenny mentions Grimm, the TV series.
Yeah.
That's Eep's favorite show of all time.
Really? I never watched that.
It's good. It's good. They start out with all about being like the Grimm's fairy tales, but then they sort of just change it, and it becomes X-Files after a while.
Oh, wow. Well,
and so it's...
That's why it got canceled, right?
Well, I mean, it was on for like 7 seasons.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it had a good run.
It wasn't on one of the lesser networks, like the WB. No,
it was on NBC.
Oh, it wasn't? Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't see a lot of stuff like the content of Fairy Tale Adventure. I mean, here's the thing, okay? Before we get into the game, which is, you could say, like, this is in the Grimm style, but really, like, I didn't find it like that at all.
No.
In fact, I don't find it, like, It's just like you're basically, it's in the style of wandering around, well, basically.
Yeah, and there's the whole thing about, like, you know, Tolkien wrote this famous essay on fairy stories. And yeah. There's this whole, like, genre of fairy that has nothing to do with, like, having a moral to a story and kids being involved and stuff. It's more just, like, fantasy. It's the original form of fantasy.
Right. So, yeah, this sort of, it's funny when you look at the box, you look at the title, you're like, oh, man. What am I getting into? But they didn't really use that in the story too
much. Yeah, and we'll go into that as we talk about it.
Shall we talk about it?
Let's talk about it. All right, Aaron. Today we're talking about fairy tale adventure, but before we get into it, we need to talk about the fine folks that make this podcast possible. And so I'd just like to read a couple of our patrons that really we enjoy. So this show is brought to you by Seabreezer, O-Rom, Self-Inflicted Learning, Brett, and Chris Munch. If you want to support this show, head on over to patreon.com/amigospodcast.
Thank y'all. Let's get into it, Bo.
Let's do it, man.
So this week we're looking at the fairy tale adventure. Now, Boat, this is one I know you've heard about this because it seems like we cover games and this gets mentioned quite a bit for whatever reason. Over the years, the name keeps popping up.
This is one of those defensive games.
What's that mean?
And I say this because whenever people are talking about console games and how you know, sort of groundbreaking a game like The Legend of Zelda was, you have one guy sort of blustering and being like, I was playing Fairy Tale Adventure in 86 and it blew this away.
Wait, just for my own edification, what year did the original Zelda come out?
The original Zelda came out in 1987, I believe.
So they're contemporaries.
Yeah.
So this released for the Amiga way back in 86. Mm-hmm. We had to double check this, didn't we, Boat?
Yeah.
Because Boat's like, that can't be right.
I thought it was 87.
But this, I mean,
it was... Yeah, because this is way, way back when there just weren't a lot of Amiga games, period.
So this was published by Micro Illusions. They did a lot of educational titles for the Amiga, the Discovery series, where Discovery Math, Discovery Science, a bunch of that stuff. They also did the Blackjack Academy, which I believe, I know a guy that's got a degree from there.
Really?
And then I know another guy who graduated from the other game, Crafts Academy.
You know, it's funny. I've got the manual printed out here.
Yeah.
And they talk about the copy protection on this game.
Yeah.
They say, yes, this disc is copy protected. Normally, the Micro Illusions policy is to put copy protection on games only and not on business or educational software. This is because games are the most heavily powered programs.
Yeah.
So
he's not wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Amongst their other offerings, more in the game area, Ebon Star Firepower, which we actually played
that. You got that right over there.
Well, not that Firepower. It's Firepower 2, by the way. Mm. Galactic Invasions, Jetsons, Laser Squad, which we also played. Romantic Encounters at the Dome.
Ooh.
That's the Astrodome, I assume. Tracers and Turbo. So this game was, it was mostly one guy. If you look, there are credits for this, but this is the guy who pretty much handled everything. Mm-hmm. This fellow named David Joyner. He's a Joyner. This guy, I got to give the guy credit for, because this is a big game for a dude. He worked on those educational series, the Discovery series. He also worked on Robo Sport and a game called Inherit the Earth Quest for the Orb, which is another big one. I was surprisingly, because I knew this game had a sequel, it didn't appear on the Amiga, but I just had a quick look at it. Like, he's given a couple, like, technical credits on it, but, like, he wasn't involved in that. He wasn't, like, a one-man show like this was.
Well, he was pretty heavily involved. He pretty much had carte blanche to hire a team.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, being a genius-level programmer doesn't always translate into being an awesome
manager.
Also,
he assembled the crew.
He assembled the crew.
Because from everything I heard and read, like, this game was not like at all the sequel.
No, and he'll be the first to admit it.
Yeah.
But the big thing that David did was he actually created a lot of the really influential synthesizer programs and MIDI programs.
I read that because he's got a lot of sound credits.
Yeah.
So get this. I was going to get to that later, but while we're here, he did, according to the wiki, He did the audio for Defender of the Crown 2, which is no good. He did some stuff for SimCity 4, and he also contributed to The Sims 2. So he was involved in some capacity in that. Now, when you say his sound, get into that a little bit.
Well, I think that he wrote a sequencer program,
yeah,
and sort of like an early Pro Tools type program. And one of the things that he did to kind of finance or his future endeavors, mm-hmm, was that, or one of the ways that he bought the Fairy Tail Adventure name back from Micro Illusions, or the company that bought Micro Illusions,
okay,
was he offered to provide some updates and some bug fixes to his sequencer program in exchange for the rights to the name to Fairy Tail Adventure.
That would have been a good move. The sequel would have been in
here. Well, I think this is long after the sequel. Yeah.
Believe it or not, this is an OCS joint again in 86.
Oh, yeah. So I played this on the A1000.
Yeah, that was great, by the way. I just love watching you play that on there. This got multiple releases. Of course, the original on the Amiga and the best. It's also got a C64 release, a very not that attractive DOS release, and a... what looks to be a pretty decent release on the Genesis/Mega Drive.
Mode. When I tired of this game and I wanted to watch more of it, there is a full playthrough of the Genesis version that I watched a lot of, and it's very similar to the Amiga version.
I think I could get into the control aspects a little bit more. I mean, I'm sure they're not as good as the Amiga, but they're probably a lot more less manic than the Amiga. The Amiga, sometimes I felt like I was a Lucille Ball at the candy factory trying to work all this. Controls at once, and we'll get to it. So, Bo, you've got them in your hand there, the original instructions for this. Do you want to, and there's a summarized version of the plot to this, but why don't you give us the Cliff Notes version?
Well, essentially, you've got these three brothers, okay, and they all have different personalities. They all like to do different things. And then one day, as often happens in these medieval villages, they get invaded by your orcs and your goblins and your death machines, right? Yeah. And so what happens is their father gets killed, but before he dies, he says, listen, you got to find this talisman that will help restore peace to the land.
And stop the necromancer.
The necromancer is the big baddie in
this. Because their dad was like the man at arms of the town.
Right.
So he got, by the way, the town needs more guys.
Yeah.
Flash.
Yeah.
And so he got taken out. And he told him, like, listen, there's a few bucks in the chest over there. Split it up and then go take care of business. And the kids are like, don't die, daddy. But he's got mortal wounds.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty much where the game kicks off when you start the game up. This game is a real it has a charm and a uniqueness in its presentation, because when it comes up like a storybook, and it's sort of flipping through the pages and sort of giving you an even more vague idea of the plot, and then it shows you pictures of the brothers, and it talks about how one is brave and one is clever and one is kind, basically.
Right.
And you get to pick which one you want. So once you see this, then it comes up where the card protection would be. This game comes with a big map, big old map. And then around the sides of the map is stuff written. Mm-hmm. And so you use the coordinates of the map to, like, pick these words out. Now, luckily, it was out of the version I had. But the remnant of that is, it also asks you, who do you want to take on the quest? And so you've got to get up, go talk to the keyboard, type in the name of the brother you want. Hopefully you remember it. And then that's who you'll start off with. But the screen's real ugly. Mm-hmm. It's I was like, man, this is a bad start.
Yeah,
it's not real. Great. I mean, it's in like big, fat, black and white text. Mm-hmm. It's unattractive. And then once you do that, the game kicks up. We should probably, before we get into the game proper, we should probably talk about, oh man, the interface. And try to explain what the interface is like. This is a game where it's a real-time... It's a role-playing adventure game, but with combat that happens in real time. And you use the button to control whatever weapon you're using, or other keyboard commands to use.
This is a game where we're really early on in the Amiga.
Yeah.
And I'm sure as David was thinking about how will my players control it, he didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, because the mouse was still a novel input device at the time.
Yeah.
Every Amiga came with a numpad, and the numpad was used in a lot of PC games to control the action. But then you also had the joystick port. So you can control this game. You can control your adventurer with all three methods. And you can switch between them at any time.
I sort of had to use them all at once. I used every possible thing all the time. Because the joystick I used to move the guy around and to swing my sword.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it did.
Right.
The mouse you can use to navigate to the little menu items that lie between the flavor text and the compass. Mm-hmm. All right. The keyboard, among other things, is shortcuts for the little things you would pick with the mouse. All right. And plus, there's some stuff in there. I mean, it may be in that mess of boxes there, but I usually would shortcut to it.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I don't think that you have to use the mouse at all.
Right.
You can just use the keyboard shortcuts and the joystick, but the keyboard shortcuts are not obvious.
No.
And there's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and I've got a list of them here. I'm not going to read them all, but there's tons.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, if you're like me, it was a three device party town when I went through the game. Now, the game has an inventory. One thing you're going to notice right away is that if you use the mouse, it's trapped in the bottom third of the screen. You can never move the mouse up to the area where you see what's going on.
I hate games like that.
I do too. It drove me nuts the whole time. So the screen is made up of the following. The upper two thirds is your game area. Mm-hmm. All right. The bottom third is divided almost in half, with one side being your flavor text, your narration, what's happening. It gives you your stats, that sort of thing. On the right-hand side, you're going to have your interface boxes for your UI, your GUI, and a compass that tells you, which way you're going. And it's a living compass. It lights up to kind of help you. So that doesn't seem that complicated, but this is one of those games where you're navigating into sub-menus and stuff. So, I mean, let's face facts. It's not the smoothest experience to bebop around these sub-menus. So that's when the keyboard shortcuts come in. The function keys are mapped to certain match guiders, for example. So if you're hard up and need to use the skull of death on some suckers, you're not going to want to go take the mouse over and try to navigate down to it. Because the funny thing about this game is you can see your inventory in the screen, but you can't interact with it at all.
Yeah, which, I mean, again,
maddening.
Yeah, maddening.
Something else I never understood, like when you give gold to somebody, I could never control how much I gave him. I would just give him some gold.
Yeah, because it always just like a few coins are tossed to the man.
So that's when the shortcuts come in. You got shortcuts for all your weapons, to change your weapons. Plus, any of the magical items you pick up, there are shortcuts that you can use to those, and there's tons. So, that's the interface. So, before we even get to the game or the graphics or anything, the interface. 86, what did you think?
This is a game. Everything about this game rewards time investment, okay? So, as a casual player, this interface is not the best. Because, like you said, having to negotiate between the menus and the submenus in a real-time situation is maddening. However, if you take the time to learn all of the keyboard shortcuts, you can become a master at this thing. And if you're the kind of person that is going to make any progress in Fairy Tail Adventure, you have to invest time. So I think for 86, and the fact that you can use all three forms of control to control your guy and switch between them at any time on the fly, plus the addition of the keyboard shortcuts for any of the stuff that you'd have to use in combat, interface, not bad. Not bad at all.
I'm withhold my interface comments until later on, but I will say, unyieldy, to say the least. It's going to take you, the learning curve is steep on just learning the interface. So, now let's get to the way the game looks, and then we'll get to the gameplay mode. The game comes up in a very colorful and I'd say pretty well drawn picture where you've got your character, you see the area, you walk freely around the kingdom and around this world. And it's an interface, the graphics on this are in a sort of a, they're in a 3D-ish way. How about that?
It's isometric.
Isometric, but it's straight on till sunrise. So it's sort of like, the isometrics on it are sort of off the side. I kind of liked it. I thought it looked pretty good. What did you think?
Great.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning. There was not a game that looked this good in 1986.
Now, well, having looked over the stuff that was out in 85 and 86, I would agree. With the exception of something like the Friend of the Crown.
Right, which was, I mean, to call it a game.
Well, I'm just saying, it looked better than this, but it was more like a demo.
Right, yeah. Right. This is a game that is, you have full control over your character all the time. You have 8-way scrolling in real time with no loading.
Yeah,
and you've got a colorful, extremely colorful, varied landscape to explore with rises and lowers and elevation, with rivers and seas, with villages and castles and crypts. This is a beautiful, beautiful game, and it boggles my mind. You know, I don't know if you read Amigo's longtime listener, Mobius, sent us a treasure trove of materials to read about this game. And one of them was a three-part interview or a three-part blog post by David Joyner just talking about this game. And one of the things that he said he was not happy with when he went to do Fairy Tale Adventure 2 was the way that the character looked on the world. He didn't like the way that the world was sort of isometric, but the character was drawn kind of flat. However, I don't think it's a problem at all, and I think it looks fine. You know, this looks so much better. It doesn't look, you know, cartoony. This looks way better. For example, I'm just going to say it. This looks way better than The Legend of Zelda. The graphics are so much more detailed. Your guy looks like a guy. He doesn't look like a little chibi version of a guy.
Yeah.
Everything is drawn well. I wish in Fairy Tale Adventure 2, he changes he spends a lot of time working on the engine. And this is a game that I don't really think a lot of work needed to be done in the way that your character is portrayed in the world and the way that things are drawn on the screen.
This is what, to me, when we talk about console RPGs and computer RPGs, to me, this is the difference.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's no wrong answer.
No.
Some people prefer that chibi sort of, mm-hmm. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I like a more realistic looking area. And so I like the look of this game. I will say when the guy's coming directly at you, he reminds me of the Keep on Trucking guy that you see the t-shirts. Like, he's leaning way back. He looks real. That's an odd. The animation of him coming towards you is odd to me. But it looks good. According to the back of the box on this, and according to the wiki, this game world consists of 17,000 screens. It's not a flip screen. It's all smooth scroll, like boats, and no loading. Now, when you hear that, you're like, wow, how do you do that? Well, it's not like everywhere you go, it's going to be a shocking revelation of newness. But it's like a real world.
Right.
If I go out and walk through the plains or through a bunch of farms, it looks like a bunch of farms. Then I get to a part where it's like kind of rocky. Then I get to a part that maybe there's like fire stuff going on. That's what this is. This reminded me, so here's how it went with me on this game, in terms of the way it looked and the way I looked at it. Because, again, these normally aren't my bag. I played Ultima back in the day, okay, the original Ultima. It's a game, and games of its ilk. It's a game that never really grew on me. I didn't like the look of it. I didn't like the feel of it. It was remedial. And even back in those days, I was like, man, I wish this could look better.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of what you would do if someone said, you know, we could probably make that look cool. And they did. And you fight stuff. And you explore. And we'll get to the gameplay elements. But in that area, it's a massive success. This is a huge, huge world. All right? It's got all sorts of different areas. To beat it, I watched a guy beat it a couple of hours. You could beat it and not go everywhere. It didn't even come close. But this isn't that kind of game. Beating it's secondary. You get your guy. You build him up. You explore. And, like, for example, I was playing this last night, and I thought, I'm going to go along this ridge line here, or this farm line, I can't remember, until I see if there's anything down here. And, like, I come across a cabin, okay, out in the woods. I go in, I snoop around. You know, you can go in the buildings in this. You can go in the towns. If you've got the right keys, you can pretty much go anywhere you want. This isn't a static. We've played a ton of games that we're like, man, it'd be cool if you could just go in the buildings. Like, this guy did it.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. Mm-hmm. You can go in all the buildings. They look like buildings. Cities look different. They have different roads. There's paths. You can go off the path. There's really no limits on where you can go. And when you have a game like that, the artistic side of it, you've got to be the King Dong. And I got to give this guy credit. He rendered some good-looking landscapes, and a lot of them, and it made it, and it's workable. So this is sort of me. This reminds me of what the next generation of your, even really skipping a generation, maybe the two up from like your Ultimas, the early ones, to where this was. I mean, this probably, when it came out, people were probably picking their jaw up off the floor. You know, we saw what came out for the first couple years in the Amiga, like we were saying, and like, this was bafflingly good for that early on. And they said that he made this with the 1000 in mind. So there you go. There's the stat level you're at with the Amiga 1000 stats. So this isn't something that you're going to require a Mega Amiga on. And for the amount of space you get, it's quite remarkable to me. And the fact that he made it look this good, I find quite an achievement, frankly, in that department. So we both like the graphics. Music. I like the music as well. They had different tunes. It had dynamic music. If you were getting attacked, the music would change. You can turn the music off because there's always a tune going on. But I found that I wanted to turn it off after a while because you get tired of it. Mm-hmm. It's good, though. Don't get me wrong. But if you turn off that music, then you don't hear the attack music. Right. Then you're boned.
Right.
You've got to. So you need. It's like your spidey sense kicking in.
Right.
What did you think about how this was set up musically?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this flies in the face of the notion, the lie that's propagated in the Amiga community that something about the hardware of the Amiga keeps it from having music and sound effects.
I knew you were
going to
go
there.
Yep.
You're exactly right. Everything you said is true. The tune is fine. You know, it's a fine tune. It kind of sounds like a Bach, you know, sort of like
noble
harpsichord piece. Yeah. And then you've got the enemy's approaching music, which is essential to know.
I hear that in my sleep.
Right. And so it's great. One thing you didn't mention that is also featured in this game is a day-night cycle.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So not only do you have these really beautiful graphics, but you also have a day fading into night, turning back into day.
And it becomes night in this game.
Yeah.
Like night.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a game where you have to, this is what we'd call these days a hardcore simulation or survival mode simulation where you have to eat. You have to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to meet these needs while you're out doing your adventuring. Now, Aaron, all of us want a different level of realism in our games. Where do you enjoy games that force you to take breaks to eat and sleep?
I don't. And I hated it in this game, which we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, I don't like that. I don't like having to do that mundane crap. I'd rather just have it. I mean, it's okay to have food. This game is real hardcore. That I will say, one of the biggest flaws this game has, there are many, but one of the most irritating ones after you get yourself going is to having to eat. That is, there are so few places to get food in the game, you know, and that was a perpetual thorn in my side because your guy gets all jacked up if he doesn't eat,
mm-hmm.
you know. But yeah, I don't need that much realism. I mean, a lot of games have you pick up food and carry it around or whatever.
Well, the difference is a lot of games have a lot of games, the food recovers your hit points.
Right.
In this game, the glass vial, recovers your hit points. Food is just for eating.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you still have to have it.
Right.
You know, but you're right. The day-night cycle is pretty interesting. I mean, there's actually time in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will tell you, this is the kind of game this is, okay? There's I found myself in a graveyard. There's a tomb in the graveyard. I had a key to the tomb, right? I went in the tomb. There was nothing in the tomb. I left, all right? So I'm watching a playthrough, and this guy's like, oh, yeah, this bum told your guy that, like, something about midnight. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in that tomb at midnight, a dude appears
right.
in there.
But the clue is not as simple as go to the crypt at midnight.
Right.
You've got to infer several things from the bum is telling you.
So I never did this because after I was done playing, then I find it. I'm like, oh, son of a gun. That's right. Where the guy was.
Right.
Because I thought to myself, why would you have a key to open this little empty tomb? Mm-hmm. Well, this is that kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
Time matters. Day-night cycle, that stuff matters. When it gets dark, it's dark. Now, you can get stuff to help, but, I mean, it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, like, to sleep, you got to find a place that's got, like...
You got to have a bed.
Or a, you know, straw, yeah. Something. It's marked. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, you're... how many times did you go backtrack just because you knew you'd passed a place like a while back?
When you play a game like this, and this is one of the things that the game does poorly, is that you have to establish sort of expectations, okay? So this game is a game that invites you to explore. It says, we've created this whole world for you to go out to, and you can do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? But at the same time, the game is like, whoa, Nelly, we see you having fun. Better stop.
Here comes the bad guy music.
Yeah, and so they litter it with random encounters, most of which are completely useless, because the main point in getting, you know, the random encounters is that you can upgrade your sword, pick up a few arrows and a bow, and you get your items. But once you have all those things, the bad guys don't just stop coming. They just keep going. And then after a while, it's not as if these bad guys are posing much of a threat, although they can kill you without warning.
Yeah.
But they become an annoyance. And then number two, you're constantly hampered in your exploration because you know, oh man, it's getting late, I'm getting tired, I'm getting hungry, I gotta worry about that crap.
Yeah, since we're getting into the gameplay here, let's just get into the gameplay proper. So, when I started this game, here's my guy, I'm in my city. I go around the city, everything's unlocked, and I just loot everything I can find. One of the things you can do is look, and if you look at stuff will pop up.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a glass vial. Right away, you get two or three things.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, I'm good to go. You go into the bar. The bartender doesn't have anything to say to you.
Right.
There
are myriad problems with the way this game presents itself in the beginning. The first thing is, okay, you open up in a village. It's just like D&D.
Yeah.
Except it's nothing like D&D because the village that you're in is depopulated.
It's completely empty except for the bartender.
The bartender.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, maybe it would make sense if you go in and you talk to the bartender, and the bartender says, everybody's dead. They were all killed.
Right.
You know, but
he's
the bartender,
jolly.
Yeah. He's ho ho, you know?
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. When you talk to the bartender, you can talk to him. But instead of like him telling you, do you want to buy something? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? There's no drop down. You have to hit a keyboard shortcut to get him to sell you things.
So you have to, if you talk to him, eventually you can get to a point where you can pick stuff.
Okay.
But it's still, it's clumsy. And the thing is, like Bo said, if the village is empty, except for this one jolly guy. So you're like, okay, clearly it's time to go out and explore the world. All right, and so I went out and explored the world. I hear it, as soon as I get out of the village, some guys come up to me, drop me right there on the spot, dead.
Mm-hmm.
A little fairy comes out, Rez is my guy. I'm like, okay, good to go. I go back out, the guys come and kill me again.
Mm-hmm.
When you start this game off, you're a wimp, and you can't beat anybody with your little parry knife, your bow.
Right.
Okay?
Your dirk.
So I thought to myself, okay, this is one of these games. So I went and I looked at a hint sheet. It's like, listen, as soon as the game starts, go as fast as you can to the southeast, to the graveyard. I did that. And there's a graveyard and there was a fence around it. It said, yeah, now stay behind this fence and kill everything that comes up to the fence until you've got 300, what's the very first stat, the 300 bravery or whatever it is. And 200, I was like, hold it. So, and basically, I did this for a while, but not that long, because I couldn't stand it.
Right.
But this is a game where you grind.
Yeah.
That's why the NPCs keep coming
and
out of the woods.
And it's not grinding, it's cheesing it, is what it is. Because grinding implies that you would have to use some amount of skill, but in this game, you're exploiting a bug in the game to put your knife through the fence to hit these guys.
Well, the thing is, without that, I had no hope. So I did that. Now, I mean, if you're particularly, like, you get a totem or a statue right away that kills everything on the screen. But
it's a
Jade
Skull,
one shot.
And so what you have to do, and again, this is something that you just have to know either through the hint book or through trial and error.
Yeah.
But skeletons are the ones that are the most likely to drop a sword.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got to wait till you find the skeletons, which means that you have to, like, run out of the village, wait for the music, see what kind of enemy it is. If it's not a skeleton, go back into the village and do that ad nauseum until you get the skeleton. Then you drop the Jade Skull. Then you can collect the sword. Then you're a little bit more robust.
But you're still a complete wimp.
Yeah.
So I hung out at the graveyard, and I did this every game I played after that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to the graveyard for, like, I don't know, half hour and just kill guys through the gate. Now, the funny thing is, sometimes a guy would pop up that didn't attack. It could be a bad guy. They look exactly like the guys you've been fighting, including skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk to them.
They're friendly.
But they're like a skeleton.
Right.
So it's weird.
Yeah.
You can still kill them,
and the manual does mention that. The manual mentions that some monsters you can talk to.
So sometimes, so once I did this for a while. So anyway, to summarize the start of the game, when it comes to learning curves, this is garbage. The worst. This is what made people not like the game.
Right.
Because I didn't like the game. Right. I hated the game.
Right.
At first, I was angry. I was so mad. I had to use a gimmick to get through the first part. But so I built my guy up. Well, then a funny thing happened. Then I sort of started to get it. And then how did I get it? Now I'm walking through the countryside. Hey, here comes some bad guys. Oh, I can kill these guys. I'll glue them. Hey, look, here's a town. I'll get some keys. I'll loot some of their houses. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to the guy. Here's somewhere to eat. I started enjoying it. But you're right. Omnipresent is always the annoyance of being tired, being hungry, or having just... Because sometimes the bad guys, even if they're not that tough, will come in mass.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, oh my gosh. And this game is super deadly. Even if you built yourself up pretty well with a good weapon, if you get caught at the wrong time, you're boned. And you can't... You can basically... They go the same speed as you. So you can't outrun anybody. Mm-hmm. You might outmaneuver a guy, maybe, but probably not.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that. Now, once you get to your second or third town, you realize that the towns are a missed opportunity. Because much like your town, you may come across a bum. You may a beggar. You may come across a healer that's stuck somewhere. You may come across a guy that's selling stuff or a bed, mm-hmm. but you don't know.
And yeah, and that is the genius of Japanese role-playing games. Because this is the big difference. Like Dragon Warrior, aka Dragon Quest, came out the same year. It came out in 1986 in Japan. And these towns and villages are fully functioning places. You see people walking around. They're going to tell you stuff that's important. They're going to tell you stuff that doesn't matter. But it looks like a place that's lived in and a place that it can be a safe haven to you.
Even
when
a game like Kadash does that. And that's at best a very minor action RPG.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. If you just come across a few people,
right.
I don't need 100 guys.
Right, and that's the thing. And then you don't have to sell the hint book. Now, maybe this was part of the plan. Maybe the plan was to make a couple extra bucks on the side.
Did they have a hint book?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see the hint
book. There was a hint book.
Oh, I didn't look at that.
You don't need that if you have a village that are popular with people that will give you rumors, that will give you hints, and it gives you an incentive to explore the village, not only to loot everything, but to find out what's going on.
This game, to me, is the uneasy, I'm going to steal this phrase. This is the uneasy adolescence of the role-playing game with computer. Because we had risen above the kind of klutzy, crummy look and interface of like your Ultimas, right?
Well, kind of. I mean, those games continued on past this.
Right, but I'm talking the early ones.
Yeah.
Even
the later ones still look bad.
But you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. There's not keyboard elements on it. This is a lush area. We've moved past that. We've got some remedial UI, okay? But the fragments of those old games were still there. And the fragments that ultimately got removed from a lot of these games, the really stupid grinding, the incredibly difficult learning curve, the really mysterious... I mean, the thing is, if I owned this game as a kid in 1986, I'd be losing my mind. And this goes back to there are people that I love this game. Love it, triple love it.
Yeah.
Okay,
People, whenever you run across people that love this game, it's not like they have a passing fondness for it.
Yeah.
They're going to back you into a corner and scream at you about why this game is great.
I know why.
Yeah.
Because this is the kind of game you fall in love with because it's difficult, you get better at it, you feel better about it, it's got tons of areas to explore, you've got towns, you've got caverns, you've got dungeons, you've got all these different lands, all right? And there's some depth. There's not a ton of depth. Let's face facts.
No.
There's practically no depth. But there's just enough of that old school stuff to make you feel like there's a world here that's full of mystery.
Well, and what it is it delivers on the promise. Because when you buy a computer and you fire up a game, especially a role-playing game, you want to explore a world. You want to have a canvas that you can go out and you can feel like you can walk forever and not see anything.
That's right.
And this game, unlike most games, delivers that in spades. It's unfortunate that it has the problems that it has because it turned most of the people that played it off.
Right.
But if you take the time and if you have a tutor, if you have somebody that's already well-versed in the game or you bought the hint book, then you will have a wonderful time with this game that will give you hours and hours of fun because there is so much to see and do. Now, this game reminds me, to me, you know, I'm going to sort of disagree about this being sort of like the adolescence of computer games. To me, this is like... this skips multiple generations of role-playing games.
Graphically, it absolutely does.
Well, I even think gameplay-wise, this game is like the prototype of an Elder Scrolls game. Yeah. Where when you're rolling around Morrowind or Skyrim, it's the same sort of thing. You're going to have tons of places where there's just nothing going on. Part of the fun of the game is that, yeah, I'm going to set out on this quest to go to this thing and do this thing. Now, of course, those games have something called fast travel that helps you out. But this game also has fast travel in the form of the stones, you know? So this game is so far ahead of its time. The problem is that the interface and the sort of learning curve and the expectations are not set correctly for the kind of adventure that this has. The other thing... that I think the other big blunder of this game is the name. I think calling this game Fairy Tale Adventure was a real black mark against it. Because really? if you're a dude, right, and you're playing some freaking Ultima, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Fairy Tale, that sounds lame.
Fairy Tale looks cool when it's spelled out like that. I like the look of it.
The box definitely helps sell it.
The box is awesome.
But I'm just saying that if you're going through a list of wares and you come across Fairy Tale Adventure, I'd be likely to pass that one up.
Well, I didn't thought about that, but you might be onto something. You know, we didn't mention this, but I want to talk about it real quick. Each of the different brothers have different statistics. And like I said, one has more bravery, one's got better like luck, and one has better kindness. I read a lot of people that were talking about the kindness factor in this. So because a lot of people didn't understand what it did, even people that had played this for a while, and I tried to look into it. I mean, in terms of me playing the game, I didn't learn anything.
The way that kindness works is it's based on your giving. So whenever you give a bum money, your kindness goes up. And if your kindness falls below a certain rate, nobody will give you hints and tips about
that. Right. And I also read that in some places, if your kindness is high enough, people will like heal you. And I like that. It reminds me of, it's like the alignment system in EQ or something. I read one guy's tips, and this works too. I did this a bunch of times. Again, the problem is you can't figure out what you're giving to people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's an interface issue, but like you could give gold to like your enemies, over and over. Mm-hmm. So like this guy's like, yeah, give gold to everyone all the time to like build up your kindness. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a while, and you could do it.
And speaking of EQ, another thing that's totally unique about this game is because you are playing three brothers, whenever you die, you can go and you can loot your corpse with the next brother.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah. I got some serious EQ vibes in a couple of places. Again, EQ is a big, huge, expansive world. Yeah, I will say, to go back to the previous references on the original couple of Ultimas, they were also massive. They also had big, empty areas. Mm-hmm. The difference is, in this game... big empty areas, just a lush, beautiful green areas that look nice. They just look like nothing.
But I mean, compared to an Ultima game, is like a postage stamp compared to this game. There's no 170,000 screens in an Ultima game. There's just not.
I remember them. I can't tell you the number of screens, but I remember like my buddy played Ultima 2 and 3 a lot, and they were large. I mean, you'd sail different islands and stuff. But I mean, I don't know how many screens they were. But the whole thing is that screens didn't mean anything because they were sparse. So, like, it didn't really... this has... when we talk about the largest of this, it looks large.
Well, in this game, you can literally walk for 5 minutes and not hit a wall. There is no early Ultima game that you can do that.
Oh, I disagree with you on that.
The chat will back me up.
Yeah, I think you can walk easily for 5 minutes. Because I remember playing with my buddy, the land was pretty large. But this game had a lot of EQ vibes to me because of the size of the lands. In fact, unlike EQ, this doesn't load. So, I mean, it's a lot of things going for it. This one was a real... I mean, how do you appraise this at the end of the day? Like, where do you put this? Because you're not an RPG guy, There's plenty of stuff they did that I don't like in this game, but they did. It's such a noble effort, and they got so much of it right that it's kind of, where do you put this?
This is amongst the best games that I've played on the Amiga.
Really? So you really are putting it over strong.
Yeah, because once you understand what the game is trying to do and what's available to you, there's nothing else like it. And to me, there's nothing better than a unique experience that's done well.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about genius level programming, being a lone wolf putting this together. I mean, it drives me insane that people talk about Shadow of the Beast as if it's the marquee Amiga title. To me,
what's a good looking?
This is the marquee early Amiga title.
Oh.
Like, if you're looking at, like, pre-A500, back when the Amiga was still a really niche system, you know, the guy said that he got $50,000 in royalties from this game. That must mean that there must have been a lot more European A1000s and Australian A1000s out there to get that much, to get that many royalties. That's a great payoff for 1986.
Well, who knows also what they were basing that number on. They could have been anticipated sales. Yeah. You never know. But I mean, I don't know how many of these sold. I was telling Boat, you can get these fairly cheap on eBay. I saw these going for the complete inbox, the big box, going for under $50.
That's incredible. I would you know, love to have this. On
so
the
this would, and it's a beauty of a game. But you know, first of all, if you consider this is from '86, it's a surefire. It's a huge win. I mean, there's that. '86. This is a big deal.
I was really expecting this to be a lot like the Lord of the Rings game that we played.
Right.
That was a total stinker. And this is not that at all. This is so much better. And so much
something
better.
Something else. This game does a lot of stuff that I like that games sort of went away from, which is I like being one guy, not a party.
Yep.
I like real-time combat, even though this is tough.
Mm-hmm.
I like there's a lot of stuff in this, but it's not a ludicrous amount of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're going to get the same stuff a lot. And you're going to get some of that old school stuff with the keys. Mm-hmm. The keys will break. They have a limited use.
Right.
And they're blah, 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 you know. So, this game puts itself in a weird spot because a lot of your RPG purists aren't into the real-time joystick combat.
Yep, that's
true. Where you have to use your dexterity.
Yep.
Because, I mean, if you're using the bow or something, for example, and you're going to get some pretty deadly missile weapons as this game goes through, you're going to want to have the aim to do it. It's not going to help you. You got to do it yourself.
Right.
And so you're going to lose people. There's a set of people that aren't going to play it because of that.
Sure.
Then you've got people that are not going to play it because, and I'm talking in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that just aren't going to get past this interface.
Yeah.
And maybe the Genesis / Mega Drive version is the one for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have people that do what we did and play it for 15 minutes and just want to throw the thing across the room. And that's where this game does this. That was the biggest misservice this game did. They should have, again, we've talked about it till we're blue in the face. You've got to hold your character's hand in any game until they get their feet wet.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just throw them in the fire. This literally starts you in the fire and it cranks up the fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big mistake this game makes. Now, it's a different era. People were more prepared for that back then, maybe. But, I mean, we're not talking about, I don't hear Fairy Tale Adventure being talked about as one of the all-time great RPG games by the majority of people.
The problem,
it probably could have been.
Well, the problem is because it was an Amiga, pretty much an Amiga exclusive. The other ports came later and they were not beautiful. So, you know, by the time that if this game would have come out in the heyday of the A500 when the Amiga was an established player.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would have been a different story. In a way, I think this game being as early as it was before the Amiga really had a chance to kind of spread its wings kind of hurt it some.
That's a great point. I think you're dead on because you got to think. We've talked to this. When they say the Amiga 1000 was released in 85, that's sort of baloney. They had made it available, but they didn't ship anything hardly at all.
Right.
So you're at the bare minimum, you're not going to even get on board until '86.
Mm-hmm.
And this game, now if this game's waiting for you, and we've played a lot of games in the early days, and most of them are crap.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you were to load this sucker up, you'd mind blown.
Right.
Right. So you're right. I think maybe some people just missed on it because they didn't have Amigas when it came out. So that's a great point, Boat. I'm going to give you credit on that one. While you're looking up the Discord reviews, I'm going to talk about the actual reviews this got because it did get some. It's funny, this game, if you look at modern reviews on this game, they pan it. And again, they didn't, you have to, we talked this before the show starts. You sort of, this is a game where you have to settle in with it. I mean, I hate to say it, I played this for 4 or 5 hours in a couple nights, and you have to play this to get, you have to get in it.
Right.
You've got to get in it like it's a sleeping bag. Amiga Lemon gives us an 8.2, which is lofty. I'll give those guys credit. But even I saw the people at Lemon fighting in the chat over how some people hated this game. Mm-hmm. Amiga Computing gave an 81. Amiga Joker, 70. Here's one, Boat. This is from 2003. Amiga Point of View, 65. They didn't like it. See You Amiga, 87. And Your Amiga, 85. The average rating, 78, which is too low, frankly, for this game. What did the Discord think about this one, Boat?
Oh, our first review comes from Mobius. 68W.
Yeah.
He says, Fairy Tale Adventure, where to begin? 1987, obviously, so he came on board a little later.
Yeah.
It was summer vacation, and I went to visit my grandparents in Illinois. My grandmother showed me their new computer and told me that the following day we'd go into town and buy some games. The games we purchased were Marble Madness and Fairy Tale Adventure.
Those are two good
those
games.
Those are probably the two best games available at the time.
Yeah.
He says, to say I was impressed by the Amiga would be an understatement. It took me a couple days to beat Marble Madness. It took me a couple years to beat Fairy Tale Adventure with the hint book. So even with the hint book, yeah. A couple years. Despite its many failings, Fairy Tale Adventure remains my favorite Amiga game. And that shows you, a lot of times, you know, your first love sticks with you.
Yeah.
If you played it in 1987, there's a good chance you feel the same way. It'd be interesting to talk to people who, you know, get a survey of people that played it contemporaneously.
Yeah.
He goes on to list the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm not going to go through all those here, but if you are on our Discord community, you can check those out.
Yeah.
He says, I like the game so much, it's hard to talk about objectively. He said, for this reason, I decided to take time away from Cyberpunk, Phantom Liberty, and try to beat this game again. And he says, most of my feelings and memories hold up. He says, the fast saving and loading afforded by WHG load actually makes the game much easier today. It's interesting. I
couldn't get that to work.
Yeah. So I don't know about that. And he says that, you know, it's impressive that this was completed in only 6 or 7 months by one guy.
That is impressive.
Yeah.
6 or 7 months. He must have been killing it.
And he says, what's the most tragic is that how easily it would have been to correct all the failings and make it a truly great sequel. Think about how easy it would have been to take the existing game engine and add more NPCs, enemies, and quests. So
yes, that's exactly what we said.
That's all you'd have to do.
Yeah.
That's all you'd have to do.
And of course, mess with the learning curve a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and he says, imagine what could have been done with two discs and a whole mega memory.
Yeah.
He says, Micro Illusions went out of business due to greed and mismanagement in true Commodore fashion before a sequel could be made. The Fairy Tale Adventure, 9 out of 10 in 87, 6 out of 10 in 2024.
Oh, so he did definitely dock it some points there.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, it's, you know.
Yeah.
Pajaco 6502 writes, Julian was hit and killed is a message you will get used to seeing and pretty soon.
Yeah.
End of the game. This game is hard with a capital H. But I've always been quite enamored with this game. The music is beautiful, and the storybook opening is right out of a movie. And I used to load up this back in the day, even if I never really made it that far into the game before dying again. When you get into it, you'll find a good old-fashioned RPG game akin to the likes of Zelda that sees you robbing people's houses for loot and attempting to take on armies of bad guys while trying to save the day.
Yes, absolutely.
Having to use both keyboard and mouse is okay, but you really become unstuck during battles when you need to switch weapons or use magic items while moving around. And again, this comes down to knowing those keyboard shortcuts.
Yep.
There's a lot of walking around with not much going on, and due to the limitations of the day, a lot of the game looks very similar, so be prepared to use a map and play in chunks over a few weeks. You can't say that you don't get your money's worth. I think this deserves some high praise for its time, and it's worth checking out if you've never played it before. And while it isn't my cup of tea, I'm so glad he didn't say whilst. Gosh, death to whilst is what I'm saying.
Okay.
I will continue to load this one up once in a while and marvel at the presentation and spine-tingling music. 7 out of 10.
You know, one thing I thought about, I think Mobius made some real good points. And I read his whole post and his good and bad. And then I read it this morning before we started the show. And I was like, you know, we talked about it most of these on the show. The sequel for this could have been awesome.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I thought you could do is what would have been nice is early on why not just have an NPC assistant that comes around with you to help you kill stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a great way to show you what's going on.
Yeah.
And he could tell you what he's doing. Hey, here's how you do this.
Right, right.
And that could have been added pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it, NPCs in the towns. That's something else. The game of this size, I mean, one thing you're going to do is just explore a lot. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of guys that, hey, there's not a lot of fetch quests. It's mostly just killing stuff, getting loot, moving along.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look around. So, if you know, that's a shortcoming as well that could have been looked at. You know, here's another one that would be, you could take this game, make a few minor tweaks, and, you know, do some of the updating and make this a whole new game with probably not a whole lot of effort. Maybe, I don't know, I'm not a programmer. But overall, I was surprised how much I enjoyed this. And I was, because especially at that first shaky hour, man, I was furious at this game. So if you can get past the opening 45 minutes, get you a hint book, get you, I went to the Hints on Lemon, follow them, they'll get you started. Once you boot your guy up, then you can actually enjoy yourself.
Yeah, and if you're one of these people that are, you know, you think that you've played the Mount Rushmore of Amiga games, you've played Shadow of the Beast, you've played Cannon Fodder, you've played Lemmings. I mean, these are all good games.
Well, not Shadow of the Beast.
Well, not Shadow of the Beast, but you owe it to yourself as an Amiga aficionado to play this game because this is truly the one of the hallmark titles on the system, doubly so because this was made at a time where there just weren't a whole lot of Amiga games going on.
This or Archon, that's all you had. Well said, Boat. I agree wholeheartedly.
If you ask any Amiga repair technician what the most problematic component of a motherboard is, they'll undoubtedly mention capacitors. The electrolytic capacitors that shipped with the Amiga are 30 years old or older at this point, and each one is a ticking time bomb waiting to explode battery acid all over your motherboard, sometimes damaging it irrevocably. Don't wait. Replace your capacitors now. Full capacitor kits for every Amiga model are available now at retrorewind.ca. Don't want to attempt the repair yourself? Use their white glove recap service and leave the intricate removal and soldering process to the professionals using industry standard equipment. Use the promo code AMIGOS10 at checkout and save 10% off your cap kit or service. Remember, make retrorewind.ca your first stop for all your Commodore computer needs.
Amiga News.
All right, Aaron, kind of a light news week this week.
All right.
They all can't be winners.
Yeah.
We start with a little thing from our Amigos community. You know,
right.
I always like to highlight stuff that's going on, even if it's not strictly Amiga-related. This one is Commodore-related. Our own Ricky DeRocher, a longtime supporter of the show, has released, I don't know if this is his first game or not, but it's the first one I know about, Castle Quest for the Commodore VIC-20.
Yeah.
The 16K version.
This looks like the opening of the last game when you type in Julian's name.
Right, right. So this is a, you know, I'm always in awe of people that put in the time and effort to program a game. Even a simple game like a text adventure is no walk in the park. So hats off to Ricky DeRocher. And if you've got a VIC-20 laying around and you want to give yourself some weekend entertainment, head on over to rickyderocher.itch.io and download a Castle Quest. It is a name your own price joint.
You know, it's good to see the Vic getting some love, number one. And number two, this is one of the few times where I actually have written several text adventures back when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I never finished them because I was too dumb, too hard, too lazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just because it's a text adventure, they don't write themselves, brother.
No.
You got to get out there and do it. And it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's the Vic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on there. So double thumbs up for the Rick. Good job, dude.
Next up, Aaron, WinUAE, which is the, sort of the platform that so many other emulators are built on top
backbone.
On. Yeah, the backbone. Has been released 5.2.
Oh,
man. I love that logo. That's a very good
logo. It's got a little
logo.
Windows logo stuck in it there.
That's true. That is kind of weird.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I guess because it's a Windows-based emulator.
Yeah.
But anyway, Neil on Indie Retro News says, this is probably the best version of the Amiga emulator so far. So he's not quite sold on it, but he thinks it might be.
I bet it is. Those guys work hard over there.
Here's some new features, okay?
Yeah.
They got full macro system Draco emulation, okay?
What's that mean?
This is an Amiga clone without the Amiga custom chips.
Oh, if you're too cheap to pick up the pay the few bucks.
If you want
to
emulate one of those, you can.
Or get them.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can also, listen, this is the first version with American Laser Games and Pikmatic State File support.
Oh, man, you know what that means. You get to play this gun game.
Right, exactly. It's got, of course, there's a lot of different RTG board emulations involved. The on-screen LED font is now configurable. So, listen, I'm not going to go through all these because, quite frankly, I don't know what they mean.
It's got the S3. I always think it's funny when the S3 Trio 64 PCI RTG retardable graphics board. I always thought those S3 boards were garbage on the PC. But, like, it's funny. All these years later, I still see it pop up.
People are still using them.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Those are the old, old days.
So, hats off to
lots of stuff. Bug fixes up the yin-yang.
Hats off to the team at WinUAE for another great release. We look forward to trying it out.
Yeah, because every time they update that, it helps everyone.
Right. Exactly.
So, well done, boys.
Exactly. And finally, our last story of the week, only three stories this week, Kickstart, the premier UK Amiga celebration going on in June of this year. The After Party program has been released. And listen, it is a banger, as the kids say.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, you're going to see David Wise, who worked for Rare. He composed the music for Battletoads, Smash Brothers, Donkey Kong Country, California Games, and more.
Man.
He's going to be live with some special guests. Listen, I'm not saying I'm not going to be up on stage playing the trombone with him.
Yeah.
But don't be surprised.
Are
if you don't
bringing
see
your trombone to Europe? You're not. There's no way you're doing that. If you do that, I'll be stunned. That big carry-on?
Yeah, I did it when I went to Thailand.
Oh, you're a madman.
Yeah.
A madman. Listen, I'm a big fan of a lot of these songs, but the Donkey Kong Country, those songs are freaking great, brother. I love those songs.
Yeah.
Those are gold.
Well, there's a
solid Super Nintendo money right
there. There's a trombone solo in Underwater World 2 that I'm going to bust out. So get ready for that.
This guy's going to let you. That'd be great. Get up there, Boat.
Next up is Pete Cannon. Cannon now currently charting in the UK charts.
No kidding.
He does some hardcore drum and bass.
What's that mean?
It means I'm going to be exit stage left is what that means. Hoffman's going to be there. Of course, you got to love the Hoff. He's going to be there.
Man.
And then they're going to close things out with the old Vogue Greenage.
That sounds great. That's a good. Listen, it's a Ravi after party. Enough said.
That's right. Listen, it's all going down at the Salt Box.
Something tells me you're not going to be streaming this part of the show, are you?
No, this is going to. I think it might work a little blue, to be honest.
Oh, man.
You.
That's a decent price, too. That's not bad for what you're getting there.
That's right. So this is going to be right after Kickstart. Once it finishes up, there's going to be partying all night long at Salt Box in Nottingham. This is the 29th of June, 2024.
Holy moly.
9 p.m. to 2 a.m.
That's going to be a big deal, Bo.
Oh, yeah.
Are you excited for the Kickstarter?
Dude,
there?
I am super excited.
Explain to me, how does this fall compared to Boat Fest? It's right after it or right before
this
it?
This is right after it. This is right. Well, it's 2 weeks after it.
It's not like
the next day.
Remember 2 weeks after last Boat Fest, you were a pile of goo.
That's true.
You got to get beer to get jacked up for that.
Well,
I'm
getting jacked. I'm preparing myself right now.
How?
Well, you know, just working
hitting
out.
Hitting the bottle?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen.
Building up your tolerance.
That's right. Been listening to a lot of, what was it, the hardcore drum and bass?
Yeah.
You know.
You know, since we brought up Boat Fest, why don't you do a little plug for your own festival, Boat, while we're here?
Listen, Boat Fest 2024 is going down on June 20th and the several days before and after.
Yeah.
Right here in Hurricane, you can go to boatfest.info and purchase tickets. I took a picture of the event space.
It looked like a dome.
Yeah.
It looked like a pleasure dome.
It's a pleasure dome of classic computing is what it is. The KubaCon is going to be there.
Yeah.
And we are going to have luminaries from around the world. They're going to be showing up to this thing, showing off their various vintage computers.
Yeah.
We're going to have live playthroughs of some of the Odyssey 2 board games.
We're going to have like the featured table. We got all kinds of cool suggestions on
Subudio's
that.
Subudio's going down on that thing.
We're going to have a lot of fun. You got to bring your electric football for
Oh, yeah.
That'll be a
we'll
good
play
thing
electric football. So it's going to be a great time. Anyway, the tickets for the whole weekend are only $30. It's going to be a great time. And we hope to see you there.
Yeah, right on, brother. That's all we got, Boater.
That's right. All right, Aaron, what are we going to play in next week?
Let's see what we got, man. Bam, oh, man, it's that X Spectrum all over again. It's Kickstart 2.
That's right.
Kickstart 2. You know it. The doubled up on this is, you know it's going to be gold.
Unfortunately, I will not be here next week.
Oh.
This time next week, you know, as March approaches, I'm pulled into lots of St. Patrick's Day's activities.
Yeah.
I'm going to be performing live at Taylor Books in Charleston.
Oh, man.
With a couple of my buddies playing some traditional Irish music.
Oh, very good. Well, don't worry, because I have brought in a ringer. It's the Brent.
Oh!
In fact, when we record next week, it's going to be double trouble. We're going to do Amigos and ARG, or I guess it'd be the Coco Show. It'll be a double dash next week, so that should be a lot of fun.
By the way, Boat Fest, June 14th through 16th. The 20th, nobody will be there. Thank you, Adam.
Would you misdate your own event?
I'm known to do that.
Oh, man. We better get out of here. Boy, it's still getting good, Boat.
Guys, we'll see you next week, and until then...
Adios.
Amigos is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Patreon supporters help choose the games we play, receive exclusive magnets, and get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server. Visit patreon.com/amigospodcast if you'd like to support the show and join our community.